No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock. We give the people their right to vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have no guests today, so we're going to wing it and talk about whatever's on our mind, and hopefully we'll get you to join the conversation. But before we start, let me first introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from Arizona. Kathleen has chosen a girly song for the break today, but that's okay because we believe in equal rights here at Shadow Politics. So I guess this balances out some of the Rolling Stones songs I picked.
Oh, my gosh. I've had the really hardcore songs. It's not a girly song. It's by Passion Pit. Did you even listen to it? No.
Did you read the lyrics? I did a little bit.
It's about money. And you know what it is? It's a kind of a song that I think represents what our age group is going through. Like, you kind of think that you're going to, I know I'm on the younger side of the 50s, but you know that everything's going to kind of, somehow you've made it, you know, you've gone through all these troubles and trials and you've worked hard and everything's going to be okay. Well, with the stock market and the economy and so many people losing their jobs, it's not that way. And this song reflects that. And it's not, I don't know how you say it's girly because it's all guys. And I don't know if you went on, they're pretty good looking guys. They're not girly looking guys. It's just not in your genre. So you assume that it's a girly song, but we'll let it pass because you live in D.C.
I'm a kick-ass rock and roller, honey. That's the difference.
Sweetheart, I am too. Hey, I like Johnny Cash and Rolling Stones. Rolling Stones was part, I mean, that was part of our era. You know, Beast of Burden,
yeah,
the rest.
It was.
Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, so don't be giving me that.
And it's the perfect thing for you to say, because that's what I've been since the day I've known you, is your Beast of Burden. So with that being said.
Great job of it. So step up to the plate, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I am. But with that being said, let me start by talking about my favorite subject, and that's D.C. statehood. A lot's happened this week with D.C. statehood. Yay!
Oh,
so, yeah, first of all, your friend and Elizabeth Warren, the tuition lady, because I know
college loans.
Yeah, I know how much you love her policy on college loans, and I do too, especially since we're paying those through our kids. But she became a co-sponsor of S-132, the new Columbia Admission Act. So that would make the District of Columbia a state. For you who may be out there listening and don't understand, the District of Columbia does not have a voting member of either the House of Representatives or the Senate, and they lack control over their budget and also their legal system here in the District of Columbia. We are actually treated like a wholly owned subsidiary of the federal government. So we don't have equal rights, but we have a bill in both houses to change that, and Elizabeth Warren has become the 13th co-sponsor. She's a Democrat from Massachusetts, and she's become the 13th co-sponsor of our bill. So thank you, Senator Warren, for doing that. And Senator Begich, Democrat from Alaska, said he will introduce companion legislation to legislation that's been introduced in the House by Eleanor Holmes Norton, our delegate, to give the district budget and legal autonomy. So that's a good thing as well, because we don't have control over our own local tax money, if you can believe that, and we don't have control over our own legal system. In fact, there's a dispute going on now as to whether we're going to elect a attorney general for the first time in the fall, or whether we're going to put that off until the next election. Senator Begich will introduce legislation to back up the legislation that already exists in the House. And last but not least, and probably greatest for us in terms of exposure, is that the United Nations called on the U.S. government this week to grant D.C. residents equal voting rights in the House and the U.S. Senate. The United Nations has come out with a formal statement saying this is wrong and it needs to be resolved by the United States government. And this is mostly due to the work of a guy named Tim Cooper and his organization called World Rights, who's kept it before the United Nations for years. So thank you, Tim, for all your hard work. It looks like it's all coming together for us, Kathleen.
Because we've started the show a year ago, and more people are aware of your troubles. I think, listen, if they don't want to give you a vote, then you shouldn't pay taxes. That's just to me. I mean, you know, if they want to do that, and I think then, you know, don't pay taxes.
I'm all for that, but unfortunately, they're not all for that. We've suggested that. Eleanor Holmes Norton introduced legislation to do that several years ago, and there's actually a guy from Texas, not one of my favorite people, a Republican named Louis Gohmert, who has the same bill in Congress today to take taxes away from the District of Columbia. And you're right. You know, we shouldn't the country was founded on the idea that you can't tax people, and not give them representation, and we ought to do that should be the very least, but I don't think that's going to happen. So we're holding out for equal rights here so we can be just like Arizona.
Yeah, that's right, just like us. And hey, I have to say to all the Arizona fans of the U of A game last night that it was so painful. That game, did you watch it?
I did watch it. Oh. It was painful, and it was a great game.
It was a great game, and I just want to say to the basketball players, I mean, they gave the U of A fans, and, you know, mostly you're either an ASU fan or a U of A fan. I tend to go ASU, but when they made it, I wanted to support them, and they did. They played. They had some great games. They weren't making the baskets like they should have, because they should have won. They just weren't putting them in there, but they gave everyone a great run, and they played incredible. And I just wanted to give my hats off to them, and tell the college students what the heck is going on with you guys. I could see you fighting or having a little riot or wanting to tip a cop car when, like, say there's equality issues or your college loans. Heck yes, go tip. You know, get frustrated over that, but don't get so frustrated just because you lost a game by 1 point. You should be thankful you have a good basketball team, and that's how you learn how to deal with life. You win and you lose, and you have to be a gracious loser. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely, but you know what? I live and die by. I went to the University of Maryland. I follow their basketball program. University of Maryland fans have done the same thing. They've gone out in the streets and rioted. They beat Duke one time and went out and had a riot after they won.
Because
they won. Yeah. So, yeah, it really is silly and immature. But ASU, Arizona,
great.
U of A, sorry. Don't get them mixed up. I know. University of Arizona did a great job. Both my teams lost. I was rooting for them. And I was rooting for Dayton, you know. Dayton didn't do quite as well. They weren't as much up to the challenge as University of Arizona. But, you know, Maryland didn't even get in it this year. So we're all depressed here. And the few teams that we had, GW, got knocked out right away. And University of Virginia hung in there for a while. they're really in Charlottesville, but people in Washington root for them. So we had a few teams in the mix, but nobody did as well as University of Arizona on our That's side. Right. Anyway,
so anyway, hats off to the coach. He's a great coach, and he stepped into Lou Olson, who was an incredible coach. So it's amazing that they've been able to continue their momentum and keep it up there. So just wanted to say that, do that shout out for the Arizona people here. I mean, we had a great, it was great, but it was painful. Oh, it was so painful. Anyway, okay, continue. What else do we want to talk about? Do we really want to talk about Obamacare?
Well, you know what? I do want to talk about Obamacare a little bit, and I don't know enough about it. It's one of the areas in which we haven't had somebody on the show to have a deep discussion about it. So I've been occupied, and we'll talk about this in a few minutes, with the election that's going on in the District of Columbia. We have a really contentious election on Tuesday. So I haven't had a lot of time to look for people to be on the show. But we got to get somebody on about Obamacare. And I met somebody the other night at a forum and gave her my card, and hopefully she'll come on. But I went to sign up for Obamacare today. Not to sign up, but to get a quote.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I was given 6-month quotes because it recommended that I it was very easy to do, and it recommended that I get 6-month insurance. Because it must look like I'm in between jobs, which is true. My wife has just left her job, and so I was kind of amazed that it figured that out. But the one thing that got me is that one monthly premium was $837 a month, and the other one was $134 a month.
What?
Yeah, there were like 5 premiums listed. So it's, on the surface at least, it seems very confusing to me. If there's somebody out there that's tried to get it and had problems, please call in and let us know. Because, I mean, I just went through the preliminary steps of getting a quote, but obviously I'm going to have to look more carefully at each insurance plan, which it allows you to do. Right. Because one is, you know, 5 times more expensive than the other.
And well, maybe that's part of it to depending on where you are. I mean, does it actually – now, see, I haven't done it because I still have some insurance through the state because I don't know if our audience knows this, but I have projects going on, but I do. I'm unemployed also, which is what I think we also need to talk about, how many of people we know our age – are unemployed. And this is a point in time I remember thinking when I was 20 and 30, oh, when I get that age, it'll be easy. I'll have it made because I will have worked this hard and, you know, I will have done all these things to make sure that I'm all right. And, you know, with the stock market crashes that happened in 87 and forward, you know, to the last one, which was like, you know, what was it, 2008, 2007? I don't think that a lot of people I know in my case lost a lot. Yeah. So there isn't that cushion anymore. And I keep on, you know, I go on to the internet and I go on these blogs and I put out there, does anyone want to discuss about what I think I'm a part of a growing group called, you know, used to have retirement, used to have a house, used to have a job, used to go on vacations, used to be able to buy things for my kids. And I can't, you know, it's funny. It's like nobody will respond to me because I think it's a very kind of complicated but a very scary subject because people don't want to really face it. And if we don't start facing this issue, it's going to get ahead of us and it'll be too late. So, you know, anyway, what I've heard is that it gives you – a lot of people have complained to me because they think I'm a Obama supporter that it's made their premiums. It's more expensive than what they had. It's not as good as what they had, and it's not the doctors that they want. I don't know if you've heard that.
Well, I haven't, but I mean, I've heard the opposition saying that, but I haven't had anybody personally tell me that. And one thing that I found is it asked me on this rate quote thing who my insurance company was. And I told them who my insurance company was, but they didn't come up as one of the providers. So I don't know if I won't qualify for that insurance or you know, I have what I consider pretty good insurance. through my wife's job, and I don't know, you know, what that exactly means. So I obviously I've got to do some more research, but it seemed pretty straightforward to me. The premium seemed as reasonable as the premiums that we're paying now, or even more reasonable, but it didn't offer us the same insurance. So that's got me wondering why exactly that was. But we've got 6 million people signed up at this point, and I think the original goal was to sign up 7 million, so it seems pretty much on target.
Well, I've heard that there have been issues, like, say, in Georgia, where, you know, a lot of the people, a lot of the county stuff are very poor, that they convinced Humana to come into there. But a lot of the poor that don't have insurance that this might have been aimed to are on state health insurance plans for the people who are poor and don't have any income. I do think that the one thing to me that really sounds that was positive about this Obamacare was that you can no longer refuse people health insurance based on, you know, past conditions, you know, prior conditions, which I remember there was something that had to do with Diego. He had something, and I changed when I got divorced, and they didn't want to cover it. It was something really minor. And I thought, wait a minute. If you don't cover it now, it's going to just get it, you know, down the road, a worse situation. But then that meant nobody would cover it. So, I mean, it ended up not being a big issue. But to me, that had to be one of the most beneficial things for parents who have kids who have cancer or mental issues or, you know, whatever, you know, because when you used to switch insurance, they could then refuse coverage on that, whatever the sickness was. And that's got to be a big, huge positive thing. And I don't hear anybody saying very much about it. You know, there's just a lot of people saying, oh, well, you know, I was listening to the news today on the, you know, the Sunday shows, and they were talking about how the Democrats need to go out and talk about how they're not going to defend Obamacare, but they're going to talk about how ways to fix it. And I think everyone knows when you do this kind of a change, there's going to be a lot of things that have to be tweaked, a lot of things that are going to be looked at. That's just common sense. And I don't know, you know, I'm getting to not like to listen to all these shows because it just, I don't, there's just no fair, and I think, fair balanced coverage anymore in the media. You're either on the Fox side, which is amazing how it's one-sided, or, you know, the CNN or MSNBC, which is totally other. And I wish there could just be someone who state the facts and let me decide what it is.
Well,
that
that's why, that's first of all, that's why you have shadow politics.
That's right.
Because we're the voice of reason in America, and we need you to call in and join in our choir of reasonableness. But you know, I think that's got to be one of the most important provisions, Kathleen. As a, you know, I have personal experience with this. My mom used to work for a company named Philips Born, and she had Blue Cross Blue Shield. And then she transferred to a job at a community college in Washington, Montgomery College, and her insurance lapsed for 90 days, but she was reinsured again by Blue Cross Blue Shield. They refused to cover any of her breast cancer treatment because they made the argument it was a pre-existing condition, even though they were the previous insurer as well. That 90-day gap, they basically made the argument that she fell into the, you know, into the nether area, and that her insurance didn't cover her breast cancer treatment when she got it. Now, when she died, she was seriously in debt because of the treatment, but she didn't own anything. So she lost just about everything. And, you know, that's the number one cause of bankruptcy in America, right, is medical issues. So that's a huge thing. And it's also a big thing, I think, for you and me anyway, that you can keep your kids on it until they're 26.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
Which makes sense. Until they get established, you know, because young people aren't going to, I mean, when I started my business, I didn't have insurance. I joined some medical plan when I started my business, and I was like 29 years old. And the first time I had to go to the emergency room with a problem, I had a high fever. I gave them my insurance card, and they laughed at me. The guy said, "You better have a MasterCard or a Visa." We never even heard of, you know, Lower Eastern Connecticut Regional Insurance Company. So, you know, whatever the company was, I couldn't remember. So, right. You know, young people, I think my premium was $50 a month or something, but it didn't cover anything. And, right. So it's good that you can keep them on your insurance till 26. So the plan makes a lot of sense to me, but the one gripe that I've heard is that, from people, is that it's difficult to get on, that the DC website kicks you out a bunch. And, you know, that certainly wasn't my experience, but I'd love to have that woman on. There was some woman I met at a rally this week, who actually works on the DC, for the company that manages the DC, portion of this. So I'd love to have her on and hear what she has to say.
Well, but, you do say, right, today, or is it tomorrow is the last day to sign up? And if you don't, isn't, I mean, the fine is, I thought it was 95, then I heard it was 300. Maybe it's 300 the next year. I'm not sure. I can't really recall, but I do, you know, there is a penalty you pay, which I can understand because, you know, we all end up paying for those people who aren't insured. You know, I saw our hospital, basically we had $1 million worth of debt from having to take care of those that get hurt over here crossing illegally. And the Border Patrol was supposed to pay us back because they have to bring the people in, and they never did, you know. So there, I saw the other side of what happens when you don't have insurance. And you know, we are a country that our hospital's policy are you cannot turn anyone away because they can't afford to pay. And I think that's a very humane policy, but it's a policy that really hurts these small hospitals. And that's another thing that I would like to talk about. And that is down the road, we need to get some people on to talk about what's happening to these small rural hospitals, which are so important to communities. You know, you can't get anyone to come into a small town and bring industry or bring a factory if you don't have a couple of things. You don't have a good education system and you don't have good health care, meaning you don't have a small hospital or, you know, one that's close to you. Right now in Douglas, you know, you can go to Bisbee. It's another small hospital. You can go to Sierra Vista, which they end up shipping you to Tucson anyway, and that's a two-hour trip. And when you're having a heart attack, that is a very serious issue of whether or not you live or die. Yeah. So, you know, to small rural communities, and there is a lot of still rural communities in the United States, having a hospital is very crucial to their well-being. And, you know, I saw ours was doing really great. You know, then it just started going downhill on a lot of things. I mean, when we were being paid, I think, 20 cents on the dollar every time with Medicare. And that was just killing us. And there's just a lot of regulation that you know, nowadays, you know, the new regulations are that people not share a room. You have to have your own room, which is very expensive.
Right.
So there's a lot of things. And I have to say that I do believe something had to be done. I know this is not what people wanted, but in my view, I put a lot of blame on pharmaceutical companies because I've seen people from New York come and went across the line and got, you know, their prescription for gout, their Valium, their antibiotics, the Z-Packs for a tenth, a minute cost of what it would cost over here. That's an issue. And then when hospitals have to charge $10 for a Band-Aid and you get your bill and it's like, you know, a foot tall because there's so many charges. You know, the medical and the industry brought this onto themselves. They have a big role in why things had gotten to the point where it's so bad. And you can't have 40 million some odd people not insured. It just, you know, it just doesn't work. And I think when you look at those industrial countries and those countries that are doing so well, they have medical plans, health plans. Japan has a great system. You know, Norway, I mean, all these other countries do. And so we have to realize that as you go down and you get into the future, you're going to have these things. So, you know, it's a wake-up call, and it's not going to be the best situation. But, you know, if we all work together, if that's possible. And I know the Republicans are making it, well, now we want to, you know, we want to end it. And I don't think you can. They voted on it 4 years ago. It went through the Supreme Court. And it is what it is, just like Social Security was. I remember back then, remember everyone went nuts, Social Security. Now it's, you know, people go crazy if you think about not having enough money to fund it or getting rid of the program. It's not going to work.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think that something had to be done. And I think that with all its bumps and bruises, this is something that has to be worked out because something had to be done. It was killing our economy. The kind of thing you talk about where we end up paying for it anyway, if you go in the emergency room, we just end up paying 5 times, 10 times as much. So something had to be worked out. And I think it's very telling that we've called this, you know, that the Republicans, the conservatives have tagged this as Obamacare, because I think that speaks volumes to what their problem with it is. I think their problem is more a problem with President Obama than it is with the policy. We've heard Bonner in the past say that was his job, was to make sure that President Obama didn't get anything passed. And that's just ridiculous. We have to come together. And this has been a major problem in America, not only for individuals, but for the country in general. And we've got to work on it. And I think you're right. There are things that need to be done, that need to be fixed. But this is the way to go. You can't get rid of it at this point. And
it's like, stop whining about it and just settle
it. Stop whining about
it. You know, there's so many whiners in D.C. I'm sorry. There really are. You know, I just want to, you know, God, if I whined as much as they did, you know, everyone would be slapping me silly. So,
wait,
you know.
Are you saying that? Are you saying it's just because I didn't like your song? That's what it's about?
Oh, well, it's not just
calling
that.
Us all whiners?
You are all whiners over there.
We are whiners.
You guys have
we
it too
so
easy.
Much. Oh, my God. You know, the people of Washington, D.C., we are. That should be, sometimes we complain about the people from New York because they complain, you know. They're complainers. But Washington, yeah. We complain just as much, but we're not as stand up about it as New Yorkers are. New Yorkers stand up in your face and complain.
That's right, and you know that because you've been with me when I was. I still feel myself like I'm a New Yorker, but I don't know. Went from a New Yorker to like, I don't know, redneck Arizonan, which the redneck people would be very upset to have me associated with them. So every time you think I'm a redneck, you know, you are kind of probably insulting those true rednecks.
Well. I think I've always felt that you are unique and that's a good thing for many.
You are a good politician.
You are. You're unique. Maybe we should go to your song now because when we come back, I want to talk about politics. I want to talk about the D.C. election. I want to talk about Chris Christie. I want to talk about Hillary Clinton. Let's talk about where we stand now politically, because I think we stand in a very, very unusual place right now. I think that the country's very divided on some very basic issues that need to be resolved before we choose a new leader. But
I think we need to talk about the two things that I think that people don't realize, you know, rural versus urban. And that's going to be a huge factor. And you know, it's interesting. I pulled up some stuff that I think we need to talk about. So please remember that you can call in and give us your viewpoint, 888-627-6008. And now we're going to go to the girly song that I chose. And if any of you think that that's absolutely ridiculous what the senator said, please call me because I need support out there. You know, I have to deal with him a lot. And, you know, I just need a little support out there in America. So listen and let us know what you think. And this is actually, it's Passion Pit. The name of the song is Take a Walk.
Thank you.
and we're back. And I've changed my opinion. That was a manly song. I'm getting ready to get out on my Harley, except that it's raining and snowing here. So I won't be, I'll just be sitting in the driveway with an umbrella.
I put up with so much. I can't believe it. So let's talk about what's happening in DC. You know, I got, it's amazing. Number one, I'm getting really frustrated because I don't know. I haven't given any money. I can't remember since when to the Democratic Party, but I must be getting about 12 to 15 emails, I'd say within every 5 or 6 hours, asking me to contribute because some, you know, Democrats are going to possibly lose. And that's just, I wonder if that annoys anyone else. Because it's just, well, I'm just hitting delete, 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 because it's so frustrating.
I think it does annoy people. You know, I was a direct mail consultant for 25 years and actually just did a couple of pieces of mail for this election. But I was a fundraising consultant mostly, and we would get that complaint constantly from people just about the mail. And now, of course, with the internet, it's nothing to get 3 or 4 or 5 things a day, and I think it does bother people, and I think you have to be careful because there's feedback from that backlash, exactly, and then they won't want to give you money. I remember whenever we would send, you know, back in the good old days when you and I and Thomas Jefferson were at the DNC, we used to send, if you were at your address and it said Kay Gomez, and then we had another person on our list called Kathleen Gomez, and then we had another person on our list called KM Gomez, you would get 3, letters. And we were always getting things back from people that said, don't waste the postage, you know, I would send you money, but you guys don't know what you're doing. And that's a problem. And I get them too.
Back in the day, you were in charge of the mailing, the direct mailing. I remember I was working for the fundraising department, the Democratic Committee, and it was like me going in on Saturday and Sunday and putting the stationery in and hitting, you know, like go. Remember those old machines? And I would sit there and spend a whole day just standing there doing that. I mean, look how far it's come. So now you get every day, you know, you're getting that you can go on, you know, click and then boom, your money's sent from your bank account. And now this whole new thing where you just take a picture of your check and it goes into your, I mean, it's astounding, that's isn't
amazing.
It?
Can okay, I tell you, so I what? Just did my taxes. I have to say this because, you know, I'm somebody that ran a small business for 25 years. So I have lots of mean things to say about the IRS, but I did my taxes. My accountant did my taxes and she submitted them electronically, and I got my refund in like 9 days. I mean, it was just amazed me. I remember it used to take months to get your refund, and then you had to put the check in the bank and clear. Now they put it directly in your bank account. Hey, look, I see we've got a caller. Before we go any further, we got a caller on line one.
Well, let's
see what she's up to. Bonnie, are you there?
I am here, and hi, Kathleen and Michael.
Hi, what's Bonnie. Up?
What's going on?
I just thought I would give you a call because you were talking about Obamacare. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually, because I love you both, and I just retired, and thank God don't have to go on Obamacare right away, because I'm fortunate with COBRA. But I wanted to say that my thoughts on Obamacare is that it didn't go far enough. And I was privileged to be able to work in Europe for almost 14 years. And when I went to a doctor there, I had to pay $10 to get anything done, or not $10, 10 pounds, because I was in England. But for here, they're making it so complex, and the only thing that it seems to me that is going on with Obamacare, and I believe that the idea was right, but what they're doing is making insurance companies richer, and that's the thing that pisses me off about it.
Well, let me ask you something, Bonnie. You were in Europe, and so you traveled around. Did you find that those countries had a pretty decent health care system in place for...
Absolutely. I mean, primarily, the only time that I had to go to the doctor was when I was in England. Totally socialized medicine, and everybody complains about it because you have to wait, and I never got very sick, so I'm not really sure what it would have been like if I didn't have some sort of supplementary insurance. But I just know that I sprained my ankle, I went to a doctor, and he fixed it was 10 pounds. Right. There was no, I didn't have to do anything. And I had some other friends that lived in Scotland, and all of her, when they got pregnant, and all of her medical care was paid for.
Yeah. Right. I had a friend
here.
And
so they pay higher taxes. So what? I don't mind paying taxes. I don't like paying taxes in the District of Columbia because we don't have representation in Congress. But, you know, if you're going to, I think that the government has a responsibility to take care of the citizens that are making them part of the government. So to make insurance companies richer is not the way to do it.
Exactly. I agree with you on that. That's totally true. And government, there is a need for government. I know a lot of people, you know, have this argument, we don't want to pay taxes, we don't want big government. But in this day's world, you can't really hide from government. So government should be making it more efficient. That should be their role, to make what money we pay them, it to be efficient, to be put to good use, and to be, have common sense. But unfortunately, you know, we've talked about politics and money and lobbyists and stuff like that, and that's where it gets all muddled. So and it's interesting because you had probably, I mean, I've heard that Japan has a very good system. I've heard, well, England does too, but I think if you get really sick, you get in right away. It's just if it's something where you could wait a couple of weeks, you end up waiting, versus here you usually can pay, I guess, to get
that's
in
true.
To see the doctor
and
sooner.
What people would do is have some sort of supplemental insurance. I had a landlady that died of cancer, but it wasn't because she didn't get good care in the hospital.
Wasn't she like 96 years old?
She was 87.
Oh, 87. Yeah, because you got to die of something.
And she only she was in great health, and then they found out she had cancer. But they took wonderful care of her. I went to visit her in the hospital several times, and they were fabulous to her.
Right.
Well, and I know that I was
not having a big insurance company taking care of her.
I have a dear friend who's married to an English woman who's a nurse and a midwife, and she went back to England to have both of her children
because it's free.
Right, and she has, and also she said they were just great care. To, you know,
they were great care. I mean, they're very well trained. They're fabulous. I had never had a complaint there at all.
Let me ask you something. Do you think that the workers, Bonnie, do you see that doctors make a good living? Because that's the other thing. Well, if you get socialized medicine, these, you know, all the doctors and people who work there are going to be not making the kind of money that they should.
The interesting thing that I saw was that the doctor I went to was Indian. Mm-hmm. You know, he grew up in the whatever it was, part of the Raj, but not quite that. He wasn't that old. But he studied medicine in the United States, and he had a great friend that works in the United States. And when they started out, he was paying $4,000 a year for malpractice insurance, and his colleague in the United States was paying $14,000.
Right.
That fellow was paying $14,000 now, and the doctors in the United States are paying $400,000.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true.
Malpractice is crazy.
It is crazy. Well, Bonnie, thank you so much for calling and giving us your input from being over there. And I think you make a good point. It may not have gotten far enough. I don't think these insurance companies need to be made any richer. They're doing pretty well.
My God, you know, I looked at all of the insurance companies a year or so ago to see how much they were making, and they refused to pay for some medical care here for me. And I found out that those guys made over $1 billion in profit last year, and they refused to pay $20,000 for something that I had to pay for.
Well,
and that was paying for insurance for years.
And they always complain about not making money. You know, they always complain about how tough it is. But I can't remember the last time that I've seen an insurance company go out of business. I mean, I really can't. Even big insurers like AIG, who were hit hard by things like the tsunami, you know, and Katrina, because they do catastrophe insurance, they're still healthy, even though they paid out billions. So
and
yeah.
Even somebody like Kaiser Permanente, that is probably the best still, even though they merged a few years ago with a for-profit organization, they still made $700 million in profit. And what they count on is people not getting sick.
Right. And there's a lot of people that don't get sick.
Right. That's
right. True. Not many of us don't. But, you know, when you have things that go on and then you have an insurance company refuse to pay because for whatever reason.
Right.
It doesn't matter what the reason is. They just decide, oh, no, I'm not going to pay for that one because I don't think she's sick or I don't think he's sick. How can they say that when a doctor already has said that they have been?
Well, I think we've come full circle now, and that is that you know, as Kathleen said when we started out, we need this. We need, you know, maybe we don't need Obamacare exactly the way it is, but we need something because of exactly the thing you're talking about. And I'm going through the same thing now. I suffer from a thing called sleep apnea, and I use a thing called the CPAP machine. And I've got to jump through hoops to get a new CPAP machine because the insurance company won't pay for this and they won't pay for that. And it really has gotten too complicated. Well, thanks for calling in, Bonnie.
How dare those insurance companies decide who's sick and who's not? It shouldn't be them. It should be the doctors that are treating them.
Right. That's the problem I've always had with HMO, is I always felt like I didn't want an accountant deciding what my care would be. Although I know some of them are very good, like Kaiser Permanente is a very good one.
Well, now that you're retired, Bonnie, maybe you'll be able to call in more often.
I don't know. Yeah, I might use a different name.
Okay. That's good. Use a different name in a different state.
All right.
All right. Thanks, bye-bye. Bye. It kind of, let me go into something that kind of happened this weekend. And my son had said, you know, he was tired of seeing. I don't know if you've all seen this, but there's been, I guess, an awareness of breast cancer, or I'm not sure what it is, but this, where you're seeing women who take selfie pictures of themselves without any makeup. And this is to, I guess, create awareness of women who are going through chemotherapy and that type of thing. And I kind of found it kind of strange because all the women that I saw that were doing that on my Facebook page were beautiful, even without their makeup. And I was thinking, well, okay, I was having a hard time making the connection. I thought, okay, well, maybe it's that, you know, women feel that without makeup, we're bare and we may not look as good. I think sometimes, yeah, that's probably with me. But the ones that I saw doing it were very beautiful even without it. And then I was doing some searching and I saw that there was this article of a woman who had gone through, I guess, a lot of chemotherapy, and it ravaged her face. And she had a picture of herself during it and what she looks like now. I mean, you know, there's no way of saying it any nicer that she did not look very good with what she was going with the radiation, the chemotherapy. And her comment was, and this is probably going to make me unpopular, but she said she didn't get it either. She said, you know, it's not the same thing to go without makeup. You can't compare that with someone who has gone through radiation chemotherapy. And she wasn't sure why that connection was. She said, well, if they raise money, great. But to her, it was almost a slap in the face. And so if anyone out there has any comment about that, I would really like to know what you think, and maybe I can understand a little better what this movement was, because I must have seen about 15 or 16 of these selfie pictures, and I really, you know, I really didn't understand. And she said, you know, when you're going through this, you don't even look in the mirror because you can't stand to see what's become of you. And so she says there's no escaping it. So just the fact that you go out without foundation and mascara, she was finding it was very difficult for her to understand the connection. So I just thought I wanted to bring that up because that was kind of something that I was seeing today. And then my son was saying, you know, I'm going to get rid of people on Facebook, only the ones I really like, because he goes, I don't understand all these girls, young girls, sending pictures without their makeup. He goes, I just don't get it. So I thought that was interesting, and then I saw what was going on, and I'd just like to know out there in the audience if anyone has any way of enlightening me.
Well, let me be the first to enlighten you.
Oh, and I'm not asking for any enlightenment.
First of all, this is not what's going to make you unpopular.
Oh, you don't think so?
No. Other things, you've been unpopular for years for a number of reasons. But no, I think, you know, I think the attempt, I understand what you're saying, but I think the attempt on these women, by these women, is to say, we are beautiful without our makeup. We are beautiful the way we are. And you know what? I'm the father of two daughters, and I used to have this fight with my wife. My wife is the daughter of a dermatologist. Okay. So when my kids were little, I mean, when the girls were little, they were like 5 or 6 years old, they used to put on makeup and to play. I mean, they didn't wear makeup out of the house or anything, but they used to love to sit in front of a mirror and have mommy put makeup on them and get them all dressed up, and they would play dress up, and they would, you know, and they would put on, you know, I don't know, lip gloss, and it wasn't anything too severe. But I always used to say to her that it bothered me because I thought, gee, they're going to have all this pressure in their life to look a certain way as girls in our society. Do we really need to start this at, you know, like 7 or 8 years old? And my wife would always argue with me, look, they're little kids and they love this. This is like, you know, your son's not going to grow up to be a cowboy and they're not going to grow up to be fashion models. This is just the way kids play. And finally she wore me down because she's tougher than I am. Well, but I think a lot of it is women are the way they look. You know, that's the way they perceive themselves, the way they look.
Well, I guess so. But I could feel from a woman who really gets ravaged that this is something that is hard for her to understand.
Because, yes.
You know, you're still able and all these. And people were saying you're so beautiful as you are. Well, if you're going through cancer and going through all this treatment, you're not beautiful. You're not. It takes a toll. And I guess I can understand her where she was coming from. And that leads to nothing we always, you know, I wanted to talk about. You know, talk about a $1 billion industry. This whole makeup stuff is unbelievable. Yeah. And there was this one article that was done by a father when he went through the beauty, you know, aisles of a department, you know, of like, you know, say Target. He was shocked at what his daughters would be facing, you know, with words like, you know, be flawlessly beautiful and brilliant strength and liquid power and age defying. And he made this great little poem to his daughters. And it was things like, you know, brilliant strength. It may your strength be not in your fingernails, but in your heart. And choose your dream not from a department store shelf, but find the still quiet place within you and the dream that's planted there. And naked, the world wants you to take your clothes off. Please keep them on, but take your clothes off and pull no punches. You know, say what is in your heart. Infallible, may you be constantly infallibly aware that infallibility doesn't exist. It's an illusion created by people interested in your wallet. So that's like a whole nother subject, you know, age defined. And he says, you know, I love this. Your skin will wrinkle and your youth will fade, but your soul is ageless, you know, and things like, you know, and I think we become so with selfies, you know, like God, everyone's taking selfie pictures and posting them. I don't know. We become so caught up in the way we look and what we can do to defy age. It's kind of a very sad thing. But anyway, okay, thanks,
well,
Michael.
You know, one thing, though, Kathleen, is that as you get older, you realize this, you become more accepting. It's tougher when you're younger. You know, in that
right,
regard.
It is.
When you get older, you're like, I got a few wrinkles. What the hell? You know?
My knees still work, so I'm in good shape.
Exactly. So, you know, and then there's people that really, you know, I would say that what you need to do as you get older, if you want to stay beautiful, is you need to take a proactive approach. Don't put the makeup on. Get healthy. You know what I mean? There's been a trend towards this. There was some woman who's a bodybuilder. Now I'm not into bodybuilding, but this woman was 77 years old, Kathleen, in a bikini, and she looked great because she works hard at it every day, and she's an instructor. She teaches yoga and other stuff, and, you know, and my sister-in-law, Mary, is in her 50s and just as pretty as she's ever been, and she works at it every day, not with makeup, but she goes, I've never been around the woman that she didn't do some form of exercise every day, whether it's yoga or you know, going out for a walk or going swimming. And that's really what you need to do as you get older, I think, if you wanna stay in shape and look good. And you're right. The people in the cosmetic industry have a vested interest in selling you all this crap.
We have very little time, and I want you to talk about DC elections.
Oh, well, the DC elections are just a mess, man. We've got 8 people running for mayor on Tuesday, and you know, we have a mayor who's under federal investigation. We've got 8 people running for the seat in the Democratic primary. One has emerged as a leader, but there's a couple trailing close behind. They don't know whether it's going to be a large voter turnout or a small voter turnout. All the other elections in D.C., including the election of my colleague who's running for shadow senator, have become subordinate to this mayor's election, and it's just been crazy. The prosecutor's been involved, and he's now said that the mayor was involved in a shadow campaign where they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars illegally, but he hasn't charged the mayor with anything. So the mayor is being accused through innuendo. Meanwhile, the campaign has just gotten really, really sleazy. A lot of people have in the past 2 years in the District of Columbia have gotten to jail. People are attacking each other. It's a mess. So we'll see what happens Tuesday. But one thing that I want to talk about real quickly is Governor Christie. He's in it again.
What happened? I know. The guy I used to like.
Yeah, the guy. I used to like him, too. Now he said he referred to the West Bank as occupied territories. And in front of a bunch of Jews and Jewish people take that very, you know, they're very sensitive about that. So he's people that support Israel don't see it that way. And so now he's back apologizing. Who's going to run, Kathleen?
Well, this is the thing. We know people who work for Hillary and for Bill Clinton. They're way up there. But I have always felt, I have never in my life, no matter where I was, Arizona, D.C., New York, North Dakota, California, whatever, have I ever seen such violent reactions to her name as far as when I discussed her with men. They do not like her. And I think what I get from it is that they don't see her as a leader, but as an opportunist. I mean, they just get vehement. I mean, they're like, they don't not just dislike her. I mean, they really have strong emotions. And I worry because I don't see anyone. I mean, I see a lot of candidates in the Republican field, but I mean, who's going to run in the Democratic field?
In the Republican field?
Paul Rand is not that bad. Come on. You talk about looking and kind of coming to the medium part, you know, like compromise. I mean, there are a couple of candidates. I mean, I like Joe Biden. He's a really straight up guy, but I don't know that he would be, get anyone, you know, kind of excited to follow him. I mean, who else in the Democratic field do you think could do that? I mean, I like Elizabeth Warren, but of course she's not at that point where she could run. But so who out there in the field that could run tomorrow if Hillary said she wasn't, do you think there is that we could?
Well, I don't know. You know, they talk about Martin O'Malley. They talk about our friend Mark Warner sometimes.
Well, I do. Now, Mark Warner is great. He is an incredible guy. I really think very highly.
And Martin O'Malley is the governor of Maryland, but I really don't know that he's the guy to do it. I think there's a shortage on both sides of qualified people. So maybe that's one thing that we should do in the future and future shows is try to come up with good candidates. People call in and tell us who your candidate, even if he's the mayor of your town of 350 people, Mike Gomez. I nominate Mayor Gomez.
Well, he would definitely be bilingual, which would be the first. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there has been somebody else who's been bilingual. I think, and again, we ran out of time. We always do, because I think one of the shows we should discuss rural versus urban, because it's interesting in the rural communities, they tend to be Republican, and in, you know, the large cities, it's Democratic. And then there was this one thing I read that the richest districts, the 10 top richest congressional districts, only all 8 of them are led by Democrats. They have Democratic representatives, and there's only 2 that are Republican. So that's kind of interesting, too.
Well, you know what I find interesting? I don't mean to cut you off, but I find interesting in that is a chicken or the egg thing. You know, do you move to the rural community because you align yourself with those people, or because you live in that community, you become aligned with those sentiments. I think that's an interesting, you know, right. aspect. Do we live in urban areas because we're liberals, or do we, you know, and we shy away from more rural?
I do know that, you know, when I was living in urban areas, which was most of my life, that there are things that I liked about it. I liked that there was transportation, that you didn't need a car, that there were, you know, a lot of things that the rural communities couldn't give. Yet now, moving out to rural areas, I see the beauty in what the United States is in its rural community. Yet a lot of things that are good for, you know, the big cities just don't apply out here. You know, it is almost two different nations in many, many ways.
Well, we're going to try to get some people to talk about that in the future on both sides of the issue. But we're out of time now. So let me say goodbye, America. Follow me on SEN.
Oh, my gosh. You got a Twitter.
I'm a Twitter.
Oh, my gosh.
I tweet.
What do you do? What do you do that I should follow you?
I tweet, but I will not twerk. I say brilliant things all the time. Tune in and find out. And I'll let you have the last word.
Just remember, everybody, that April is our 1 year anniversary. We thank everyone who's kind of supported us and written to us and told us that they do think we are doing a great job. And listen, because we're going to bring some of the people that we felt were really good. I think college loans is another, about time, and the ERA. So there's still a lot of issues we got to address. Thank you.
All right, America. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
In the capital of this nation, 100 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.